So do I have to take you guys off video if I want to pull up the slides?
I think we can share the screen, Sergio.
Yeah.
Just scroll
through it. Okay, gotcha.
Get there. Yep.
Okay, so Chris, I'm going to work from the agenda to start, and then once it gets to the investment reports, then maybe you could share your screen.
Sure.
Okay, because the first items are just about follow up from the last pension committee items. So the very first item was the OPEB RFP, which went out. I just wanted to give an update on that. I'm actually meeting in a panel tomorrow to review the three actuaries that submitted, which is Milliman, Siegel, the current actuary that does the OPEB.
Okay.
And also, H&H.
Tucker and Holcomb.
Tucker and Holcomb, who does the pension side for us right now.
Okay.
So we have three very good candidates, and hopefully tomorrow with the panel we can come up with something to make a decision, and I'll share that back out. If anybody's interested in seeing any of that, I'll be happy to provide you with the information. But it's biggest of financial documentation and the RFPs. It's a lot of everybody submitted it all hard copy. So.
Okay.
The pension RFP, Chris and I discussed that, and we were talking about, you know, the Mass Mutual and the fees that they charge and whether it made sense to put that out. And Chris had a couple points that I didn't realize. I'm still getting up to speed on these, on the costs associated. Chris, you had said that basically the legacy, was the Aetna plan with the fees? Is that what it was in regards to?
No, so I think I did just to be certain I understand, Bill. So this is for the defined contribution plan?
Yes, the DC plan, yeah.
Okay, so for the DC plan, and Diane and Sergio both know this story well, right? You've got a legacy Mass Mutual plan, an old Hartford plan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. That's okay. And that Hartford plan has a fairly high crediting rate. And there's always, right, the endless conversation around, is there a subsidy element of this for people who have access and are using that high crediting rate versus those who are not and are necessarily paying a higher fee for, access to the rest of the lineup. And about two-thirds of your money, as you know, is in the target date fund. So there is a little bit of perspective there on that front. But so that's a conversation I know the committee's had through the years, and there isn't a definitive right answer. And the Mass Mutual fees, trend a little bit high because of that legacy crediting rate being higher than market, but not necessarily outlandishly so. And I think, Bill, right, we talked a little bit about it's probably something that you can live with for an extended period of time. And continue to evaluate, and kind of the complicating factor, as everyone knows, right, is Empower has decided to purchase Mass Mutual's retirement business. So there's that transition going on as well alongside this other stuff. So I'm not going to, Bill, redirect me if I'm misinterpreting, but I think the thought was for the time being, there's enough going on there to maybe let that situation settle down a little bit.
Testing
the market sometime in the near future.
Exactly. Well, we'll take another look at it down the road, but right now I'd like to hold tight on it. The next item was to discuss the pension plans and combining the town with the fire EMS plan. And it was, we had to find someone that, an attorney that had, good pension experience. And I did get someone from Halloran and Sage that we're working on scheduling a time for him to review those plan documents to see if we can get those combined to leverage, a larger asset. So I'll let you know what comes of that. But with the holidays, I'm trying to get it scheduled, before the holiday, before for Christmas, but it's a challenge. Yeah. See, I'm keeping the pace. So, Chris.
Yes, sir. Let's see. I had warned Bill I was having troubles this morning with a share. Do you need, it says host disabled participant screen sharing.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me try to do that for you.
Okay. Hopefully this will work for us here.
All right, you should have something pop up.
All right, let's see if I did. Let's see here. Everyone see the Canton agenda?
Yep. Yep.
That's
working fine. I don't know what that quirk was this morning, but fortunately we've got it figured out. So I think as Bill had mentioned, we can be pretty tidy with our time today and run through this information pretty quickly. I'm just going to try to bear with me here. I'm going to try to kind of get this down to a little bit more workable size maybe. Can be pretty tidy with our time. From a governance standpoint, with respect to the pension plans this quarter, we did want to, as indicated there, just give you a quick sense of the landscape across Connecticut from a high-level actuarial standpoint. This, of course, doesn't supplant your valuations and all the detailed work that those folks do, but there were some interesting observations and trends we just wanted to make you aware of here. So we went out and surveyed all of the consolidated financial statements across the state. You can see there about 166 of them, and just morphed that data into some visuals here for you to look at. And you can see there from a funded status standpoint in the upper left-hand corner, similar to the town plans, right, that are both funded at the, call it the 77% rent level, most of the cohort you see there falls in that 70 to 90% funded level, and the town's plans fit squarely and very nicely in alongside those. What I think is interesting and of note, you look at the discount rate trends over the last several fiscal years, and you see there that pronounced, right, and continued march to lower discount rates, and now the largest cohort being that, call it 6.75 to 7.25 percent return assumption. You folks have been in front of that, right? You've got existing return assumptions at 6.25%. So it's kind of refreshing, right? You've kind of made headway on the discount rate front, and yet the funded status of the plans have held in nicely and very representative appears as well. So you've got a funded status akin to what you see, and yet most of the state plans, that you can tease it out of the data here, the average discount rate statewide is about 50 basis points higher than your own. You see that listed down in the observations there in the very bottom of the page. Our average came out at a 676 for fiscal year 19. So I think that the general story from a funded status and a discount rate perspective is a constructive one for the town. And if you marry that just from an investment return standpoint, there's again, a bunch of data here. I would point you to that first bullet down on the bottom half of the page. You see fiscal year numbers for ending 19 and then the 3 and 5 year averages, 5.7, 7.9, and 5.2 respectively. We don't control here for allocation, but you'll remember the town plans I would submit have generally tilted a little bit more conservatively from an allocation perspective than the statewide averages. And bear with me here, the numbers aren't on this page, but if you were to go back and look at your 2Q 2019 reports, you'll see that the plans did about 6% for the fiscal year 19 versus the 5.7. About in line with that statewide average for the 3 year, we had, I think, about a 7.9% return, and then a 5 year number that trended just about in line as well, 5.2, 5.3, call it. So again, I think probably on the margin, somewhat more conservatively allocated, but holding serve on the investment return front as well. So in terms of those three data points, just to recap, healthy funded status, an advantage, you know, vis-a-vis the assumed rate of return, which is comforting, right? And you've kind of done that work already to a large extent in front of your peers. And then, you know, a pretty competitive investment returns, I think, as well, particularly given the allocation profile of those two plans versus broad state averages. So again, nothing actionable for the committee, really, just some information. We catalog on pages 9 and 10 that information that we just talked about. These are just simply from the Hooker reports for the respective fiscal years, and I think we've kind of handicapped that information already. So I think we're in good working order, and then I'll pause momentarily, but the final GovCal update, just we are keeping tabs on, as you know, the transition that's undergoing now of Wells Fargo to Principal on the custody bank front for the two pension plans. I think everything is going according to plan. We talk to those folks on your behalf regularly. I think, Bill, they're probably engaging with you a little bit as well, hopefully in giving you that same comfort. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Principal decided ultimately to retain a lot of the Wells Fargo systems and processes from the legacy approach. So I don't think you're going to see really anything in the way of changes in terms of the way they kind of integrate and assimilate data and reporting and whatnot, and with the same individuals by and large. So we'll keep you posted there. Again, no implications for the two plans. So anything from a governance standpoint, Sergio, Diane, that requires more clarification? It's relatively straightforward, but.
I'm good.
I was just curious, if we use the state average funding ratio, where do you think we'd be?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I would probably defer to the actuaries there, but I suspect if you were up at those rates, you'd probably have funded statuses in the 80s, right?
Yeah, I would. You know, if you think that the duration of our liabilities is probably, you know, at least 10 years, maybe longer than that, yep. Multiply the 50 basis point differential times 10, you've got 5%. And yeah. That's at the low end. I would say it's probably a duration longer than 10, given where interest rates are. So maybe 12 years, a little more than that. So yeah, you could easily be in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, are we comfortable with that?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, Diane. I would tell you, right, when you speak to municipal actuaries, this is a funny thing, right? So it's not a corporate plan, right? There's not, in theory, an end date. There's not a desire necessarily, right, to close a plan and get rid of it. And you've got this weird intergenerational equity consideration, right? What cohort of taxpayers owns that deficit, right? And you, how do you manage that versus those in town and paying taxes today and the services, right, they're receiving for that versus those coming in the future maybe. And I think if you talk to most municipal actuaries, you know, they would categorize healthy plans, you know, funded somewhere between 75-85% because they are, right, going concerns that exist in theory and in perpetuity. Right, you don't have that end date concept you do with a corporate plan. Sergio, I know you're certainly a better actuary than I am, but that's the way you'll hear the municipal folks talk about it. You don't need to be fully funded, right? And whose burden is that if you try to get there?
I guess what I would say is, you know, it's a good benchmark to look at what your peers are using for the discount rate or the assumed asset growth assumption. But you also have to believe it, right? So it's like, what do you think the right long-term investment growth assumption is given the asset mix that we have in this fund? So, you know, you're looking at a 10-year treasury that's what, 90 basis points right now? So maybe add some credit spread. So maybe you got 200 basis points there. And then what are you going to assume on equities? I mean, we've already had an 11-year bull market. I guess I would be hesitant to raise the valuation rate. I think historically there's been a bias because obviously there's a illusory benefit to having a high assumed asset growth assumption. And so I think municipalities and other pension plans have been a little hesitant to lower it because of the impact that it has on the funded ratio, but you know, it really comes down in your heart, what do you think the long-term return assumption should be given our mix of assets? I think, what, 60% equities, 40% bonds. And it's like, and then decide whether or not you think the 6.25 is more reasonable or 6.75.
Yeah, so that's a good segue, Sergio. And just as a reminder for the committee, I know you charged us with this and Bill and I talked about it a little bit. Next time we convene, we'll run those formal asset allocation studies for you and we will show you with our latest inputs what those forecasts look like for the allocation. I know you would ask that and we kind of figured it didn't make a lot of sense to do them for this meeting if we're going to have brand new assumptions in a couple of weeks' time. So we figured we'd do them with the benefit of the most topical information. I think alongside that, you had asked us to test the domestic versus international equity mixes as well. So we'll do that alongside that, and we'll have an explicit answer for you the next time we convene about what kind of the investment potential is for the mixes you've got currently.
I guess my question more, you know, aside from what Sergio said, you know, 6.25 to me, you know, I think it's fine. It's not so much that I'm questioning that. I mean, I think asset returns are going to diminish in addition to low interest rates. I just don't know how much further we can run with this stimulus we're putting out in the government. Someone has to pay sooner or later. But here and there, I mean, that's an economic forecast. And I think you're looking at a longer time horizon. But what I'm thinking about this plan is, what do we have, 10 years left on it? Like, how long do we think we have on this? And how much more funded should we be? I don't think this is, I just feel like it might be a little shorter than we think. And maybe I'm wrong about that. And who pays for that eventually?
Yeah.
Like, our plan is just a little different. It seems like it has a shorter time horizon. And it's not really about making the numbers work or look good. At some point, we got to pay this out.
Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, the goal should be 100%. Funded.
By when?
And well, I mean,
that's our goal, 10 years, 5 years? Like, what's the longevity of this thing? Well, we're starting to see the end.
Yeah, well, when we have the liability actuary here, and I think we had him last quarter. I mean, he talked about kind of like the liability duration and stuff like that. I think it was still in the range of like 10 years, right? So,
yeah.
But 10 years is not that long for a plan, I don't think, for being only 75% to 85% funded.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, which suggests that we should be more funded. But I don't know if this is what you're suggesting, but if you're suggesting, well, let's enhance the funded ratio by increasing our assumed asset growth assumption, well, you're fooling yourself unless you actually believe.
I am not suggesting that. That's my point, that, you know, I don't think we want to make it work. We need to figure out how it can realistically work. What do we have to do?
Well, so, I mean, we have unfunded liabilities and we've got kind of like the amortization schedule.
Yeah.
We do not roll the maturity date the way some pension plans do. We actually stick with the original 10-year amortization period. Mm-hmm. And so, in, you know, at the end of that 10-year, original 10-year period, those unfunded liabilities will be paid off. So I think we're much more fiscally responsible than a lot of the other municipalities. So I think we're doing a lot of good things, the low discount rate and the fact that we're not continuing to roll out the maturity date on those amortization schedules. I mean, those two things alone will help ensure that we're going to be fully funded.
I mean, I'll defer to you on that. That I'm not an actuary whatsoever. I'm more of, you know, in the markets. So my concern is the 6.25 return assumption. I think going forward might be a little bit high, but I don't think it's outrageous.
Okay. I thought you were asking,
I'm not wanting to raise it by any means.
Okay. I thought you were arguing that we should move towards more the average of our peers.
No.
I agree with you. I think if anything, 6.25 is probably on the high side.
Yes.
But we also have to be cognizant of the impact that would have on, you know, our current year contributions. It would raise that up.
Right.
And so.
But that raises the question that my point was, do we need to do that? And I guess your answer is no. And I don't, you know, I'm not
an expert. No, I actually
studied that, so I don't want to pretend to know anything about that.
No, sorry, I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you were suggesting increasing.
Oh, gosh, no.
The valuation rate.
No.
I would not be averse to lowering it just because of the fact that we do have shorter duration liabilities than maybe some plans that are still have open contracts and they're accepting participants and all that kind of stuff. And but we can certainly entertain that. We can ask the liability actuary for a sensitivity test, what would the impact to the contribution level and the funded ratio be if we reduced the valuation rate by 0.25%? And then Bill can kind of assess whether or not there's an appetite within the town of Canton.
Well, that's just it. You know, that's my point. Like, and Chris touched on it. Who pays for it over the long term?
The taxpayers.
Right. No. Right. But now or later, like, where do we stretch that? Where do we really try to get to that funded 10-year?
Yeah. I mean, I think we should be using our best estimate on the what the valuation rate is, right? So Chris alluded to the fact that he's refreshing the long-term investment assumptions, and he'll kind of look at what the current allocation is by assets. So, you know, we'll see what that best estimate is. We can decide or at least express an opinion as to whether or not we think it's credible, but it sounds like that'll be coming due next quarter. So then that would be probably the right time to decide whether or not we want to make a change to the valuation rate.
Okay. I think I just wanted to bring it up as a point of discussion, not just assumed. And I don't want to beleaguer, you know, go on about the point, but okay. I think you and I now are on the same page. We think it should be a little bit lower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely not higher.
No.
Okay.
Agree with all that. I am going to, in the interest of time, because both of you are students and active in the markets, I think you know what happened in Q3. So we're not going to spend a lot of time there. If you are inclined to look through that stuff and get back to us, we're obviously happy to answer questions, but I'm going to cut to the chase here if no one objects, and bring you right into the portfolios. Allocation, here's the town plan allocation at the end of September. You see there, generally aligned with target weights, and we've been taking the directive when we've needed cash in the interim with Bill of sourcing from equity and trying to lean into the international equities as well a touch. Again, kind of consistent with your observation and recommendation. So I think we're in good working allocation perspective. No issues at the manager level. Across the roster, I think we're in pretty good working order. You see it was a decent quarter in the middle of the page for the portfolios, up about 5.6%. So ahead of benchmark, kind of that same directional advantage year to date and on the 1 year. And we're kind of still working through, right, those longer dated numbers. Remember, we frame this deeper in the report. This is the 60-40 benchmark here. In fairness, some of those longer dated numbers, as you know, were more conservatively allocated, and that relative differential is tighter when you kind of look at the true allocation, apples to apples. In the interest of time, we won't go through that this evening, but you do see performance has stabilized there a good deal. And since the markets have stabilized, things have been going well. You don't have it on the page here, but I did look and they're not official yet. Fourth quarter to date, we've got the plans up close to 8% when the benchmark's up about 6.4%. So through the fourth quarter, and it's interesting, right, is kind of the breadth of the of return starts to widen a little bit beyond the large cap growth glamour stocks. You're starting to see that infiltrate the numbers as well, which is encouraging as we get, you know, better results at down cap. And in the international markets as well, and obviously a good deal of stability in the fixed income markets too. So I think we're in good working order from a performance and an allocation perspective. Just quickly, I want to be sensitive to Bill's directive on time here. So I'm going to just quickly jump to the firefighter plan. So here's that same exhibit for firefighter at the end of September. Just a million one call it. And again, right, directionally, not identical, but very similar allocation. Yeah. Observations versus target, and that kind of operating with that same directive when we've needed cash over the last couple of quarters or months. And I think we're in good working order here, and the numbers, right, are essentially right on top of what we just talked about for the town plan. So good results in the quarter, good results for Q to date is an interim update. And Sergio and I were joking a little bit, who would have thought year to date through September, when the world was coming to an end on St. Patrick's Day weekend, that we'd actually be talking about positive results, given how severe that dislocation was. But the resiliency that in the markets has been pretty darn amazing. That's the quick update on the two pension plans. Stop me here and bear with me. I'm going to jump over here quickly to the DC plan and just quickly bring you through here. Again, I'm going to, in the interest of time, there isn't a whole lot to kind of, I guess I should do this right for 30 seconds, just in terms of governance content. I think, as you all know, in our kind of high-level survey that we did over the summer, you know, there's been some changes to contribution levels when you kind of look broadly across DC plans, although a lot have kind of stayed the course and hunkered down on employer contribution. Lots of education, right? In the upper right-hand corner of the page, you have seen kind of more active programs and reach outs from plan sponsors in conjunction with record keepers to keep participants informed. And I do think, Bill Wright, in talking to Mike Sheets at Mass Mutual, there's access on the website to some tutorials and some information. And if you need help, reach out, and some of that type of an outreach effort from Mass Mutual during the pandemic and subsequent to it. So trying to give tool sets to participants to try to stay the course and stay relatively calm anyways. There's a lot of gobbledygook on this page, and I think you both know, right, that there is a movement afoot to begin to introduce, you know, we've talked about accumulation kind of being the goal for DC plans forever. Now there is coming from the DOL, right, a requirement that'll probably implement next fall that relates to converting those accumulations into annuity streams and trying to estimate for participants what their saved totals will actually do for them in retirement. So really the takeaway from this page is more to come, but increased disclosure, and the record keepers, of course, are all working on these disclosures and models and how they'll display these and statements and the like. And again, more to come on that front. Nothing actionable really, just an FYI for the target date review, stuff that you're doing, right, just on the governance front quickly, I think through the course of the four meetings throughout the year, right, I think a lot of these are things that we collectively talk about and monitor.
Chris, can I interrupt you for a sec? Sure. I was kind of distracted by something on my phone, but could you go back to the CARES Act, the slide before? So a question, the fiduciary thing. So, but Bill, are you guys providing lifetime annuity quotes to the 401k participants? That's one of the things that needs to be on employee statements, is kind of what the estimated, well, this is a public plan, so I don't know, but on for the Voya financial plans that I work on, we're actually adding in kind of like an annuity estimate based on individuals' account balances.
Yep.
And so do you guys have that on your statements, Bill? Because I think it's going to be a requirement.
Yeah, I'll take a look into that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Sergio, I think Mass Mutual is working on that capability, and it is
to
do it in a time frame, you know, consistent with the requirement, which again, right, you see there, I think the effective date technically is next fall. I know the record keepers are all working on that capability, and they know they've got to be able to do it for participants going forward.
Okay, gotcha.
And Mass Mutual has said that they are obviously working on it as well. But a fair question. You know, the other governance stuff on the DC plan, again, just in terms of kind of periodically looking at goals and objectives, doing plan reviews and sharing that information with you folks and with Bill, of course, and the education communication efforts. I think there's kind of a protocols in place via our governance calendar and its content and our discussions where we're kind of tackling all these things, you know, quarter to quarter, and building that, you know, quote unquote fiduciary trail and kind of monitoring the things we should be monitoring as fiduciary. So I think you're in pretty good working order on those fronts. I'm not going to go through this detail tonight, certainly, but we do catalog all of these this information and draw some comparatives to industry standards. You know, we'll keep you posted through time. Mass Mutual doing what they should be doing from a data collection and security perspective. And we do query on that regularly and make sure that their protocols are you know, market competitive and appropriate. I think they're doing all that stuff as you would expect. And then just really in the lineup itself, not really any significant changes on the utilization front. Across the options available to participants, as you see, quarter over quarter. Not a ton of change, a bigger balances given the good September quarter, but not really on a percentage basis, anything that dramatic. And as you know, these tend to be pretty stable. Actually, quarter to quarter, participants don't typically change things all that much. Catalog, just as a reminder, the T. Rowe target date funds and the mentality around how T. Rowe builds those target date funds across the suite. And again, we think we have conversations with them regularly and think they do it in a pretty thoughtful manner. So we don't have concerns there. And then just starting with their numbers in terms of the reviews, you do see that by and large, you know, relative to peers, the T. Rowe's hung in pretty well from a competitive standpoint across the suite, and I think is in pretty good working order. And then the individual options are listed here as well. And we don't have any of the funds on watch just now. Are certainly a mindful both of MetWest's total returns relative ranks here. You can see them kind of running ahead or in line with benchmark, but a little bit more conservatively allocated than peers. So that kind of catches up to them a touch on the relative ranks, but again, not all that problematic in our estimation. And then the mid-select growth there, you do see decent absolute returns, but a little bit of a shortfall there from the sub-advised fund. Remember, that's T. Rowe and Frontier Capital Management, the sub-advisors there, and mindful of what's going on from a performance perspective, but we don't think it bubbles up just yet into a watch status, given the way they build portfolios and some of their tendencies, kind of expected that they would lag a little bit on a relative basis. So I think the lineup is in good working order. And then all the other requisite detail is kind of behind this here. So let me pause there for a minute. Again, I know, Bill, you had a pretty firm directive on the length of this meeting, so I want to be respectful of that. And I'm just kind of scrolling through here, not really, just so you see the content, frankly. I think, Bill, this is a back to maybe some of your stuff right here on the agenda.
Yeah, I just wanted to show that it was well-funded, the OPEB. This is evaluation.
Yeah, the only thing I had in the OPEB, just for maybe comment, is the OPEB, as I scroll down, right, this will only take 30 seconds. Is our OPEB report on the other side of the Siegel, Val? I don't remember how you put it together.
It should have been all your reports were. There it is. Yeah, there you go.
So just quickly on the OPEB for Sergio and Diane's benefit here. Really, the only thing I would suggest, and I apologize, we duplicated the content here. Sometimes this report goes off to the Board of Finance too. The only consideration here, and I think it's probably accentuated a little bit more that I would kind of bring up for the group is we probably should visit current balances and maybe contemplate a little bit of rebalancing. You see here that the portfolio, by virtue of what equities have done versus fixed income, we're running a little bit more relative overweight equities versus target. So, and I think that's probably, this is as of September, right? I think that's even a little bit more accentuated given what's going on in November for equities. So if no one objects, I think what we'd probably do is just to work up the paperwork and just do a little bit of trimming of equities here and just redistribute that back into fixed income to keep you a little closer to those targets. Mm-hmm. Just that discipline of rebalancing periodically and trimming those winners. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward, I think, in performance there, right? The
track record. Question related to that. Do we have sort of a an official rebalancing policy with respect to frequency? Like do we say that we rebalance on an annual basis, semi-annual, or just kind of when we think about it, when we get too far out of line?
Yeah, I think the IPS is a little bit open on that. It mentions the fact that, you know, there's the wherewithal to review balances regularly and rebalance as necessary. As you know, captured in the IPS's are tolerance ranges around those targets, right? So certainly to the extent that there was a more dramatic move, there would be a necessary rebalance. But when you're kind of hovering around with these type of levels, I think it's done kind of on an ad hoc basis, and we're kind of monitoring those balances on your behalf. You get a kind of a natural correcting mechanism in the pension plans, right? Because we're raising liquidity on a regular basis to fund pension payments. In the case of the OPEB that's just kind of accumulating right now, you know, we don't necessarily have that mechanism, but we are obviously doing that same monitoring, and we're trying to strike that balance, as you suggest, between frequency and not doing it every time, right? We're a tenth of a percentage point over and above, but doing it frequently enough so that we're kind of staying, you know, largely equivalent to strategic targets. So there is rebalancing language. I don't think it's precisely rules-based though. It grants a little bit more authority to the committee, town administration, kind of working alongside ourselves to accomplish it.
Okay.
But we do obviously, as you know, are regularly monitoring and keeping tabs on this and keeping Bill posted. And performance has been good in OPEB as well. I don't have the November flash numbers just yet for this asset pool, but you do see as of the third quarter, a pretty decent quarter for the plan, up 6-7. Not a surprise in an absolute sense, right? Because this plan leans a little bit more into equities than do the two legacy pension plans. But on a relative basis as well, there you see decent numbers year to date, 1 year. And then this inception date is a little bit of a mixed bag, right? Because on the front end of that track record was predominantly exclusively indexing, actually. And now that you've started to introduce a little bit of active management, you've started to see a little bit of a pickup there from the managers when they're performing. So we'll work with Bill on a little bit of rebalancing. It doesn't sound like anyone objects, but otherwise the OPEB plan's in good shape too.
Okay.
And I think that's, Bill, that's, I'm sorry, I went over on you. You told me.
Thank you, Chris. No, that's good. You want to just keep your screen up and scroll past that one?
Sure, where do you want me to get land on?
Just get down to the next agenda item right after this report.
All right, and we'll do that.
Should be coming close. These are the minutes from the last meeting. I know it's a committee, and we still have to approve the minutes, though, right?
I think so. I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I second it.
All right, very good. And I know you both agreed with the meeting dates. Comes right after this, Chris.
Yep, got it.
Yep.
Apologies for being my admin.
That's okay.
So we're going to go with 6 p.m.?
Yeah, we're going to go with 6 p.m. I think that'll be a little bit better for us. And we'll stay on track for Zoom. And, you know, obviously let you know well in advance if anything changes.
Yeah, if we go in person, I don't think I'll make six.
No, I think the Zoom setup for this kind of meeting works well anyway. We're sharing a lot of documents, so it's good.
That's fine.
The only other attachment that I had in here was really was the OPEB valuation, and it came up as a question last time around. How well funded is it? And it is very well funded. I can't remember the percentage offhand, but and Chris is getting us
yeah,
there.
It's right up in front of this, right? I meant to pull that number when we were scrolling through, but I didn't here.
Yeah, it should be just a few pages into this thing. It's found in a few places though.
Supporting exhibits, bear with me, folks. Money weighted returns.
I think it's on 11 of that package.
Thank you.
That's Siegel, page 11, I think is what we're looking for.
Thank you. Let me scroll back there, make sure I don't run over it.
That was it? No.
Oh, was that
one
it?
More? Yep. Sorry. The other way.
Keep going.
Next one back.
Right. There you go.
Okay.
92% funded.
Yeah, that's good.
That is, Sergio, remember we had brought that up, it must have been a year now, where we had thought it was 100% funded and we talked about why are we taking any risk.
Yep.
But then the actuarial numbers, we were wrong and they redid it. So This is good news.
And also, Diane, right, with that a hurdle there on the right investment return, that's 6.25. So be mindful of that as well in terms of the allocation. So we'll run the OPEB through the optimization framework too and give you that same allocation perspective at our next meeting.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly argue if the funded ratio is 92% on OPEB, and I think what's our equity fixed allocation, 65-35, it's actually more aggressive, even though it's a better funded plan than the pension plan. So you could kind of argue that we should, if 60-40 is the right kind of equity fixed income allocation for the retirement plans, then we should have a lower equity allocation for OPEB, given the fact that we're much closer to our 100% funded ratio. So, I mean, Diane, we still, you know, certainly as advisement and maybe when we have a more detailed discussion on this, we might want to consider lowering the equity allocation to maybe 55%. Something right. Less than the 60 that we have on the equity, retirement plans.
I think incrementally, maybe every year you revisit that by 5%, 10% or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they decreased the healthcare cost after this 7% increase, decreasing by 25 basis points down to 4.5%. I would actually see the opposite trend, but.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those costs are just going up and up and up.
Yeah.
But maybe it won't be a factor. It'll be governmental medicine.
Good point.
Maybe.
All right.
And I think that's work for the town because I want a 3.5% raise every year.
3.5%.
Payroll growth rate, 3.5%.
Yeah, wow.
That's pretty nice.
You don't get that in the private sector.
Yeah, they had to go apply at the town. It's got to be something for me.
No. 2% maybe.
I think that's unions. I don't know about that rate, but I think it's unions.
Seems awfully high.
It is, yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting point. I didn't even look at that.
Maybe those two things will offset each other. The growth rate won't be
that's
as
right. high.
The healthcare costs will be higher than we anticipate. So.
No, that's
true.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else? No.
I don't have anything.
If anybody has any other additional ideas, Chris did bring someone forth for a possible committee member. We're right now in the middle of, I think it's with the Board of Selectmen. So if anybody else has anybody in mind, that would make things a lot easier.
Okay.
So many companies don't allow it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Conflict of interest, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you all so much. Have a safe and happy holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye, everyone.